Welcome to Extra Sequential. This is our Fantastic Fourth podcast, or as you like to call it,
The Fast and the Furious.
Yes, or my lengthening forehead. That's what people say when I'm losing my hair, my receding hairline. I say my forehead is actually getting longer. This is a new, relatively new.
Gross, but
can we still be called new?
I think we're still a new podcast. Okay. 4 weeks is still new. Like a child would be new if it was 4 weeks old.
Not 4 years old, though.
No. I said 4 weeks.
You did. My name is Chris.
My name is Mladen.
We're two comic book pop culture fanboy lovers. Not of each other, but lovers of pop culture.
We're lovers and we...
I'm a lover, not a fighter. And we are coming from Perth in Western Australia.
Yep, from my wonderful loft here in Northbridge.
Loft.
Yeah.
We're drinking, having cigars and reading books of poetry as we speak.
So if I cough up a lung during the show, you'll know. Oh, yeah, recording early on a Saturday morning.
We are.
Because we got so much to talk about today. And,
we sure do. We're going to be talking about news, which is all film stuff.
Yep, film stuff and anime news and so forth.
Yep.
We have
what we've been reading,
and then just some general reviews, I think, this week.
Yes.
Yeah. Keep it relaxed.
Yeah, man.
For a change.
Chillax.
Yeah.
Here we go. Okay, first up for the news, we are now on iTunes. That is now...
This is world news, people.
Well, it's good news for us.
That's a plug. Official.
Oh, it's a lot of technical know-how and confusing.
You know, people who are listening on iTunes would already know that.
That is true. But for those that aren't, perhaps they, you know, want to download us on the train from their iPod. I didn't have an iPod on my phone. Do you have anything iRelated?
Nothing iRelated, no.
I do have a MacBook, but...
I've got an iPhone equivalent, like a Samsung or something.
Oh, yeah, so I have an iRiver MP3 player.
They're not related, are they?
No, they're not.
Can they use the little i?
Yes, and I think they do, but everything is small.
It's
got a big R. So if you want to find us on iTunes, all of our episodes will be out there now. If you just go into the store and podcasts, you search Extra Sequential, you'll see the little blue plus sign.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a cross, by the way, it's a plus, because plus means extra.
Gotcha.
Yep. Sequential art, Extra Sequential.
Yeah, we got it.
So we talk about comics and other stuff.
Yeah, I understand, Chris.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're listening on iTunes, our website's extrasequential.com otherwise.
Correct.
And I think there's longer explanations of what we're doing on the show there.
Yeah, it is indeed, my friend.
But now proper news?
Yes. Please.
Should I mention the Ghibli thing, I guess?
Is that how you say it? Ghibli? Ghibli?
It's, oh, gosh. I've heard it both ways, and the Italian pronunciation, I think, is Ghibli, but they all say Ghibli, which is wrong. But
sounds that's like Giblet.
Yeah.
Isn't that a part of the chicken or something?
It is, and that's what the studio's named after.
Really?
No. It's some Italian
studio.
Yes. Cut Magazine conducted an interview with Hayao Miyazaki, one of the original founders of Studio Ghibli, anime studio, produced Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, and recently Ponyo on the Cliff.
And they're in Japan?
They're in Japan, yes. Yep. Anime studio, Disney's distributing their films in the West, so they have lots of good voiceovers.
Yes.
And they've basically said if their current film, the one that's just been released in Japan and will be released in the US and elsewhere soon, Arrietty the Borrower, if that doesn't do well, the studio will shut down. And it will continue as a handful of staff, basically just as a copyright management company to keep the income flowing.
Properties.
Yeah, that's it. But if the film does do well, Miyazaki says he wants to do a Porco Rosso sequel, which is one of their films about a...
which I've never seen.
A man who's cursed and sort of looks like a pig, and he flies a plane in like... Yeah, it's like a biplane. It's pretty funny. And that'll be their first ever direct sequel to a film.
So is the financial stake of this company so dire that one film's all it takes to make a collapse?
Or? I find that kind of shocking. Mm. It's like Ponyo did pretty well, but I suspect the previous film before that, or previous major one before that, Tales from Earthsea, which was directed by Miyazaki's son, didn't do very well.
Okay.
And I agree that film was kind of boring and not very good.
Yep.
And I know Miyazaki doesn't get along too well with his son.
Oh, okay.
So my assumption is it's probably more of a case of if it doesn't do well, they don't feel comfortable handing down the company to a new set of runners. Like with Disney, you know, when Walt Disney died, the films went through a slump.
Yep.
You know. And if it's not up to his story standard, I can understand him not wanting the Ghibli name tarnished, so they're just willing to shut it down.
Wow.
Yeah. But if you're interested in a Porco Rosso sequel, it'll be set during the Spanish Civil War. But yeah, it won't happen unless if Arrietty and two more films are successful.
Okay.
I find that shocking that they're in that bad straits.
Yeah.
But I guess their films are expensive.
That's true.
Yeah. Other piece of anime news, Satoshi Kon, director of Perfect Blue, Millennium Actress,
yes.
The TV series Paranoia Agent, and Paprika, which I still think was a direct inspiration for the film Inception.
Okay, I haven't seen that, but I've seen Perfect Blue and a Millennium Actress, which is kind of almost Hitchcocky drama.
Yeah, he does these psychological Hitchcockian, what is real, what am I imagining, who am I kind of things. And Paprika was specifically about going into dreams of people, and there was also the... stealing thoughts thing, but the other way around, and accepting ideas. It wasn't a ripoff, but that you could see
similar
topics as well. But Satoshi Kon's died at the age of 47 due to cancer.
Wow,
I know, it's sad. Young. Yeah, well, that's just it. And he was working on his first ever film for younger audience, which was called The Dream Machine or The Dreaming Machine.
Okay,
it was about like the cast were all like robots and stuff. It looked pretty fun, cool. And that was due to come out 2011. And they were working on storyboards and all that. They hadn't started animating just yet.
So it might still be released by somebody else picking up the slack, you think? Or?
That's just it. He's written a last blog post from his deathbed.
Okay.
And sort of saying that his chief worry was, you know, everyone's hard work.
Yeah.
And not just his, but everyone's wouldn't get realized to screen because he's gone. And his business partner with Matt from Madhouse has sort of said, you know, we'll make it happen, whatever. And there's a nice little quote. I might read it. Yeah. He's saying what Murayama-san says to him first. I regret losing your talent. I wish you were able to leave it for us. Then he says, if Madhouse's Murayama-san says this, I can go to the netherworld with a bit of self-pride after all. And of course, even without anyone else telling me this, I do feel regret that my weird visions and ability to draw things in minute detail will be lost. And that can't be helped. I am grateful from the bottom of my heart that Murayama-san gave me the opportunity to show the world these things. Thank you so very much. Satoshi Kon was happy as an animation director. I'm like, aww.
Mm.
That's the last thing he's quoted as saying. So
I noticed in there he also directed or made Tokyo Godfathers.
Yeah,
Which is another good film.
I've seen that one.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Have you seen any of these besides that one?
Perfect Blue, Millennium Actress, Tokyo Godfathers.
That's good.
What I've seen.
Yeah, well... You can see he was quite good in it and very unique in his own way.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Sad to see him go.
Indeed. Also, we're going to be talking about X-Men.
Yeah, let's do Marvel films and X-Men.
Yeah.
We'll start with X-Men.
So, yeah, X-Men First Class, which was a series and miniseries and then an ongoing series from Marvel Comics. So the film studio is now taking that name and basically making a movie of it, obviously. So X-Men First Class talks about... it's like an origin, how the X-Men got together and all that kind of stuff. Mm. Bryan Singer, who directed the first two X-Men films and then went on to ruin his career with Superman Returns.
He did kind of... because so much money was invested in that. It kind of ruined him a bit.
Well, everybody thought, oh, he did such a good job with the X-Men. He did an okay job. Let's put him on Superman. Anyway.
I really, really liked the first two X-Men films, especially the second one. First one, looking back, is a bit slow, and I don't think it...
No.
But at the time, it was that was the dark night of its time in that it was the first kind of superhero film to have a serious thing going on, dark of dark themes, you know.
Kind of finding its feet.
For sure. I thought the second X-Men film was the best possible X-Men film you could get from at least that franchise. Anyway.
Yeah. So here's what we know. This is Bryan Singer talking to MTV. The film will be set in the 1960s, and it will heavily use that time period's trappings. Mm. So JFK will be president, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X will kind of parallel Professor Xavier, the bald leader of the X-Men, with Magneto.
I hope it does use the period, because you saw Wolverine, didn't you?
Yes.
That was set in the 70s, and you cannot tell from the film.
Well, I was thinking, you know, maybe being set in the 60s is a bit odd. I don't know if the kids will actually show up, because we'll see Cyclops and Jean Grey.
They'd have to be quite young, wouldn't they?
Well, you think, I mean, the original X-Men film was released in, 99, 2000, so they weren't like 40.
No, that's so, just it. Yeah, they all looked in their 30s.
So perhaps we'll see Professor X and Magneto in the 60s, and then the kids in the 70s.
From what I could tell from the casting that was being done, it was all the older characters. So Beast, who would have been like in his 40s in X-Men 3, The Last Stand by
Brett Ratner,
and and I don't think they're using any of the other main, like Cyclops isn't supposed to be in it.
No, yeah. You're right, actually. Blah 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 blah. Yeah, it does say because obviously Cyclops, well, Jean Grey, Storm won't be in it.
Yeah,
but Cyclops's younger brother, Alex Owens, aka Havoc. I guess there'll be allusions to Cyclops and Jean Grey and all those characters. Kevin Bacon is playing a bad guy, Sebastian Shaw.
Kevin Bacon as Kevin Bacon,
who will be the leader of the Hellfire Club, which is you know, bunch of leather-clad dandies running around like a secret society kind of
thing. Sure,
sure. And they reckoned that because the film was set in the 60s, it'll allow the filmmakers to get away with the more garish colours and fashion styles. So the
That's good.
Instead of the boring leather jackets...
The leather jackets, yeah.
We'll see perhaps the yellow crosses and the blue costumes.
Oh, yeah, cool.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, here's the casting that I know. It's going to be written by Jane Goldman and directed by Matthew Vaughn. So those two worked on Kick-Ass and Stardust,
okay, yeah.
Which are also comics films.
I forgot that Matthew Vaughn did Stardust, eh?
Yeah. it has six screenwriters in total, though, so that's never a good sign.
No, that's actually quite common.
Really?
Yeah, usually...
Not that many. Usually maybe it's two or three, but that seems high.
Usually what happens with these big budget films is they'll have a couple of writers and then they'll have rewrites and it'll pass it along the chain. It is a studio thing, though, so usually you require a strong-minded director to tie it all together. So that's what you notice. Some big tentpole films have very uneven scripts, and they like going through 12 writers isn't uncommon.
Okay. James McAvoy is playing Professor X.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. English actor. Michael Fassbender is playing Magneto. I think he was in Tarantino's last film.
Yeah, I looked him up. I couldn't place him.
No. January Jones from TV's Mad Men will be playing Emma Frost.
That's the blonde one, if people are wondering.
Yeah. She had a sort of a cameo in the Wolverine film. Nicholas Holt, who is from the TV series Skins and also the Hugh Jackman film about a boy, he'll be playing Beast as a kid. So,
oh, the slutty one from Skins.
I don't know. I've never seen that.
I think if it's a guy I'm thinking of, he's basically the slutty dude from that show.
Okay. With the weird eyebrows? Is that the guy?
Yeah, he's like the good-looking one on Skins, I guess.
Okay.
But
if there is one. so that's it. I'm not too excited about this film, but it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. Yeah.
Well, after Wolverine Origins, I don't think people are...
That was quite a bad movie.
They require a good film now to come back from...
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Wolverine shows up like in the post-credits and the credits and he's, "Hey kids, I'm Wolverine. Your kids should call yourselves the X-Men," or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Just to make the fanboys...
You're not men, you're like some sort of ex-former men.
Yeah.
No, there'll be some like tongue-in-cheek reference to something, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like some kind of animal, a Wolverine, if you will. Yeah. But that's not the only film news for Marvel. God, Marvel are making a lot of movies.
It's good.
Well, it's good in some ways.
If only DC would follow up.
Well, they went through that period of Catwoman films and stuff. Yeah.
I just had a flashback.
Dude, you own it on DVD.
No, I don't.
You're
that
lying.
Or Ghost Rider, I think, are the only two comics films. Halle Berry in leather, okay, but as a Catwoman film... Oh, sometimes I just want to strangle with the accountant executive
of
Warner Brothers.
You've seen it, so you...
I have seen it.
Yeah. Are there any cat puns? Like, lots?
I don't know. Sharon Stone's in it.
Yeah, she's the villain, though. Well, yeah, I guess they wanted her to have a girl villain. But Batman Returns had a lot of cat puns, didn't it?
Yeah, she had nine lives and...
Yeah, like, stuff, and she said things like, "Watch out, this kitty bites," or probably something like that.
Meow.
Right? Yeah, she said meow, that's it, yeah. Sorry, back onto Marvel, not the DC universe. Marvel's working on an Iron Fist film. My initial reaction to this was, I have no idea who Iron Fist is.
He is, and this is all what I know, Matt Fraction, actually, who writes The Invincible Iron Man now, he writes, or started when he started writing for Marvel, he wrote an Iron Fist series, which is meant to be awesome, and I should pick up. But Iron Fist is centered on this guy, Danny Rand, who's like a American, and he learns karate from this Mystics of Kunlun or something.
Why couldn't he have just been a Japanese guy?
He has a yellow bandana and stuff. I don't know. Usually the Japanese are the bad guys in Marvel comics.
Yeah, I find Marvel... tend to prefer whiteies.
Yeah. So this is directed or written by the guy that wrote the Triple X, the first Vin Diesel.
Yeah, that's right, Rich Wilkes. Wilkies or Wilkes.
One of those.
Yeah, excellent Triple X film, which featured Vin Diesel like skiing down away from an avalanche.
Oh, and, yes.
Yeah, great film.
Mythbusters
should
bust that one.
Not Triple X 2, or Triple X Squared, I should say, which I think was either Ice Cube.
Ice Cube, yes.
Yeah, I always mix him up with Ice-T. It was Ice Cube.
Yes.
Yeah, Ice-T's on Law and Order as for you. Special Victims Unit. Law and Order, Rape and Sexual Assault Only Unit.
LL Cool J is on NCIS New York or LA or something.
Yeah, and Chris O'Donnell, Robin from... Yeah.
Wow, man.
Full
six
circle.
Degrees. And we have Metric Kevin Bacon this morning.
But yeah, Marvel had attempted an Iron Fist movie nearly a decade ago for as like a vehicle for Ray Park, who starred as
Darth Maul.
Darth Maul
and Snake Eyes in G.I. Joe, grown again.
I didn't know. And Toad in X-Men.
Yes.
Oh, small world. Wow. And yeah, at the same group, Marvel Disney, who are working on Iron Fist, they're also working on a Doctor Strange movie, and that's with the current Conan writers, cool. Thomas Donnelly and Joshua Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Are you interested in that?
I would like to see Doctor Strange. That would be an interesting film or something different from the Marvel Universe, more fantastical and weird and strange.
But just to clarify, there's no chance either of these characters will be in the Avengers. That's happening under a different Marvel banner.
Yes.
I think it's Marvel Paramount is the group that are working on the films like Hulk, Thor, Captain America, The Avengers, and so forth.
Yes.
And separately under different banners, you've got Edgar Wright working on Ant-Man and Runaways, you know, a separate film.
Well, I heard a rumour that Ant-Man may or may not still go ahead. I don't know because, somebody asked him for the stuff.
Scott Pilgrim, didn't do too well. Although, it has picked up.
Yes, well, I'm sure Scott Pilgrim, like Kick-Ass, will do phenomenal on DVD. But I think because the Avengers films are going to be quite serious and Ant-Man is going to be more of a lighthearted take, I don't think they were...
Well, he wasn't planning on doing a straight-up superhero story. I think he wanted a separate kind of... a different kind of take. So I think there was like a more spy science thing.
Okay.
Like more science fiction, I think, is what he wanted to do
with
this character. So it'd be less of a superhero save the world thing.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, well, Edgar Wright's got a unique vision.
Yes.
But I thought I'd just mention, because I don't think we have any more...
No,
news here. Oh, if anyone was hanging out for the Magneto Origins film, it's probably not going to happen anymore.
Yes.
This X-Men First Class has absorbed it, basically.
Yeah.
And it was all pre-production business side of it, so it's just not happening anymore at the moment. Maybe 10 years down the track
I don't think people will be interested in seeing a Magneto Origins film.
That far away as well.
Yeah. I mean, Wolverine, because he's a good guy and he's popular. Magneto,
I want to ask, what do you think? Like... this is more of an opinion thing.
Okay.
But, like, do you see this superhero film bubble bursting anytime soon?
As long as the studios keep producing superheroes that are different.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, we shouldn't say superheroes, we should say comics.
But do you think people will lose interest?
I don't think so. I mean, how many romantic comedies are out there? I tried to watch The Rebound last night for some reason, because there wasn't much to choose from, with Catherine Rosita-Jones film.
Rosita? Like the
Rosetta? Did I say Rosita?
Yeah, Catherine Rosetta starring Jones.
That's Spanish.
Yeah.
Spanish cousin. The Catherine Zeta-Jones. It's just bad. And how many romantic comedies are out there? I couldn't even watch it. They're all the same. They always have the wacky psychic friends. And they keep throwing them out there. Superhero films aren't all the same. They're different. We got
well, it's arguable.
Well, we've got, something like, say, Kick-Ass is quite different from, say, the seriousness of Dark Knight.
But Kick-Ass in theatres, say, didn't do very well at all either. And do you think that's because... maybe people weren't sure what to expect of the film, or it was a lack of brand recognition.
I think it's also these studios, they had the same problem that they had with Scott Pilgrim, I guess, is that they didn't know what kind of film they had and how to market it and how to best do it. Like the posters for Scott Pilgrim were quite bland, and the same with Kick-Ass. There's no idea that you get into it.
Zaki Kick-Ass posters just had them sort of the four main characters
just
basically
posing
but against these really colourful backgrounds, so people thought it was a children's film.
Really?
No, I'd heard that.
In the title?
No, seriously, I saw it. It does have a sort of like what teenagers, preteens might say.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
But and the trailers weren't showing the more violent side.
No, that's true.
The TV trailers.
Yeah.
And I noticed it's another Australian reference, but I was watching Sunrise, I think.
Oh, boy.
I don't normally watch Sunrise, and I don't like Kochi.
It's a bland morning TV
show. It's a very bland morning TV show. You have them everywhere, I'm sure.
Unfunny hosts.
Yeah, and they were reviewing Kick-Ass, and one of the reviewers said, it's not for kids. And Kochi was like, really? Are you sure? Like, just shocked because the ads were selling it as this colourful romp.
Yeah.
Whereas it is a colourful romp, but it's not for kids.
Yeah.
So no one went to see it, basically.
Okay.
But Scott Pilgrim had a similar problem, and its second week, it made a similar number to its first week, which means it didn't have a disastrous second week drop.
It didn't go down like films usually do.
Yeah, if films aren't doing what they normally... most films have a second week drop. This one didn't.
It's the kind of film, like yet. Seven, had when that came out years ago, the studios had no idea what to do with it.
And I think Fight it's a Club, slow burn, yeah.
Yeah, and just word of mouth spreads and eventually gets a cult status.
And this came out against The Expendables, which probably took a lot of the audience that Scott Pilgrim might have had. But Expendables is doing quite well with female viewers, surprisingly. Maybe a lot of guys are taking their girlfriends.
Yeah, true. Well, there's probably a lot of pumped guys with their shirts off.
Mm. I don't know how they measure these things, eh? There must be certain theatres which just keep track of who's buying the tickets.
Mm. They have hidden cameras.
Yeah, like a small survey group, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's enough about Marvel movies, I think.
That's the news for this week.
Let's do it. Let's get into what we've been...
Reading. And watching.
And watching and playing. This week.
I've been playing with my He-Man action figures. No, I haven't. I want to talk about The Darkness, The Four Horsemen, which is a four-issue miniseries being released from Top Cow. The first issue is out as we speak. It's written by David Hine, who also wrote FVZA, which is Federal Vampire and Zombie Agency by Radical.
And Strange Embrace, which was his first sort of breakthrough thing, which was an indie thing, which is awesome.
And he's written a few issues of Detective Comics lately.
Yeah.
Art is by Jeff Wamester. I don't know. That's how you say it. So The Darkness has been around for quite a while. One of Top Cow's... the publisher Top Cow, one of their main characters, along with like the Witchblade, probably the two most recognisable characters for Top Cow.
Mm.
If you're not that familiar with The Darkness, it's not a glam rock, hard rock kind of... well, it is, but it's also a kind of character.
It's that and so much more.
Hitman Jackie Estacado gained control of demons from another dimension on his 21st birthday, so whenever there's darkness, he can kind of... He transforms his body into like a scaly, armoured kind of creature with... And then all these demons come running out from the darkness, so he's powerful when it's dark. It was an awesome game. It came out probably two years ago. Yeah. And what I liked about the game, obviously you can shoot lights out.
Was it an FPS?
An FPS.
That's a first-person shooter, sorry.
That is. And you have tendrils, which you can shoot out, and you can carry guns and stuff as well, and kind of control the demons. But Hell, there was a level in Hell, and it was all about World War One. So the setting of Hell was like in World War One, like the trenches and the battlefields, there's barbed wire, there's corpses. It's the freakiest version of Hell I've seen anywhere.
Wow.
Anyway, so The Four Horsemen opens 2006.
Worse than Bill and Ted's Bogus Adventure?
I don't remember what
Bogus Journey, sorry.
Oh, right.
The adventure was excellent. The journey was bogus. I should know that. Jeez.
Yeah. So it opens in 2006. I don't know why. Maybe I haven't been following The Darkness lately, so I don't know if he's dead or what. But anyway, so it opens 4 years ago, and Jackie Estacado is summoned by an old mafia boss called Lucio, and Jackie killed his brothers a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he summons him, and he's like, why? I don't know why this old guy wants me.
Why?
He turns up, there's a bit of a fight, and so Jackie gets his mate to turn the lights off in Lucio's house.
In Hell, or are they in
No, they're in his house.
Sorry, okay, yeah. Oh, okay, I see.
In the American countryside.
Chris is scrolling through the comic as we speak, so I can,
And so, he sends his tendrils out. He attacks Lucio's goons, and there's an awesome, quite ghastly panels.
That poor goon.
Yeah, he's got his brain ripped out. And
I think that was unnecessary. He could have just killed him.
And he's saying, So before this old guy gets killed, he has a last request, and he basically tells Jackie what it is. There's four. He wants revenge on these four bikers from 35 years ago who killed two of his brothers, and then they reappear. They're the same age. They're called the Demon Riders. So they turn up at this town called Ginsburg, and they wreck hell. Wherever they touch, people just start killing each other and stuff. It's quite rude. So there's this guy in a buffet, and he can't stop eating. He has like five servings, and his family freaking out, and then he eats the arm off one of the waiters. And
is this comic on the shelves with like normal superhero comics? Or is it in
they always have. I don't know if this actually has a warning, but yes, it is on the shelves of normal superhero.
Because I mean, looking at some of the stuff that happens, it's I guess it is cartoonish violence, but still, it's quite brutal.
It doesn't actually say. Does it say mature readers?
No, there's nothing like that.
No, it doesn't say. Yeah. But it is a mature readers title.
Yeah.
So and these four bikers who are bandanas, leather clad, goatees, sunglasses, kind of Hell's Angels types. they're based on the four horsemen from the Book of Revelations in the Bible. So you've got death, pestilence, war, and famine.
Yes.
So they're basically going around killing people, and then Jackie has to kind of, as this last little favour to this old man, he's going to stop them. So he hasn't kind of confronted them in this first issue. In the first issue, there's an afterword by David Hind, the writer, about his childhood love of motorbikes and leather jackets and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, the art, it's pretty fluid, kind of exaggerated expressions and that kind of, it looks nice, but it's pretty dark and gory. Mm-hmm. So if you like your kind of Hitman darkness horror titles and don't mind a bit of blood,
yep,
it's a good book to grab.
I've noticed that Four Horsemen are like a popular theme for...
Yes.
I wouldn't say it's overused yet, but like it's like Earth, Wind and Fire, you know, that kind of...
Isn't that a band?
It is, and that's also a popular theme for like the Fantastic Four, Earth, Wind and Fire, if you break down...
Yeah,
really,
that's true.
They are, yeah. He's, Stan Lee said that's okay. What he kind of based them around. Cool. You can tell which one's which, I'm sure. But, no, it's, it does crop up a lot. Yeah.
They show up in Marvel and Apocalypse turned Angel, one of the X-Men, into Archangel with the big metal wings into one of his horsemen, and I think he was War. Mm. He's now with X-Force, which is a new series now.
My favourite is, do you read Terry Pratchett at all?
No.
Yeah, I stopped reading Discworld like a while ago. Have you know of the series?
I do, yep.
Yeah, series of fantasy novels kind of playing on the conventions of the genre.
But, yes.
No, he had a particular novel which was about the Four Horsemen and the fifth member who left the group before they became famous.
Okay.
And his name's Ronnie Soak, and Soak backwards is Chaos.
Oh, okay.
And that was pretty funny. They played in like the Beatles, obviously. Cool. But that just reminded me of that.
Awesome.
Just a tangent, I'm sorry.
What have you been reading?
Oh, I've been reading a comedy comic called Gaston Lagaffe.
French?
Yeah, of course it's French, baby.
Give me the book. I want to look at it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hold on. I have to pronounce his name properly. Oh, God. Joachim Jiderholm?
What did you call me? No, that's good. Okay, so it's...
That was an attempt.
It's a cartoony kind of style in the asterisk large
format. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Joachim E. Oh, okay, there's two guys. Sorry. Joachim... E. Jiderholm.
Wow.
That's my best attempt. It's a French comic from about the 60s, 70s, around the same time as Asterix and that. It's either French or Belgian. I'd have to check that, actually. It's a comedy book, quite quirky. It's about a lazy doofus who works for a comic book publisher.
Okay.
And they all get frustrated at him for basically being a lazy doofus. And he invents ridiculous things in his spare time instead of working, usually. Or he tries to fix people's typewriters and... There's a lot of slapstick kind of humor, you know.
Cool.
Comedy's always hard to do.
It is.
Yeah. But I find, this is quite good. And I remember this from being a kid, so that was nice. But you won't really find it in English at all. I've got a Croatian edition here. I think the only edition in English is subtitled Goma Goof.
So like Goma Pile?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I guess Gaston Lagaffe has a bit of a fancy tone to it. But I guess in French it would sound pretty... You know, because Lagaffe would be like a mistake.
Yeah.
Okay. But the comic's sort of like single gag half pages. You know, like newspaper, like you'd see in a newspaper or magazine. Yes. Like you know, the Garfield Sunday strip is the landscape format thing. It's like that sort of thing. But if you can find it and if you can read a foreign language, I recommend checking it out.
American Splendor.
Ah, yeah.
I told you to watch this film when it came on TV recently.
You did, yeah. Cool. It's pretty awesome. I hadn't seen it before, and I'd wanted to. It's about kind of the life of Harvey Picker, who's quite a famous late 70s, 80s autobiographical, semi-autobiographical.
Recently he died.
Recently passed away, unfortunately, yeah.
So he's played by Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, the excellent... very well, I thought. Basically, he wrote these... stories of just stuff that happens to him during the day and the weird people.
He's a clerk in some kind of lonely government office.
He's a government file clerk. He earns barely any money at all. And the film itself is like a blend of comic and film. And after seeing Scott Pilgrim, I can sort of see similar things happening there. You know, like they'll have drawings up on screen.
Yep.
Really love the music in it. It's got this jazzy soundtrack because Harvey Picker himself used to collect records.
And he appears in the film.
Yes, he does. Both him and Paul Giamatti. Like, it's the film.
They talk to each other?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think once they talk to each other, and there'll be scenes with Harvey Picker himself talking, and then in the background you see Paul Giamatti just sort of watching and laughing or something. But there was a couple of quite nice quotes in it. I liked Ordinary Life is Pretty Complex Stuff.
Oh,
and that's kind of what he's about, you know, not just, yeah, living day to day, he's harder than it looks, you know. And he's kind of, the film starts with him trick-or-treating as a small child. And all the kids are dressed up as superheroes, and he's the only one just as himself. And then I was like, what are you meant to be? He's like, I'm Harvey Pekar. And that sort of sets it all, you know, you're the hero of your own story,
yes.
no matter what you are. And did you watch it?
I did, but years ago.
Okay, do you remember Toby?
Is he one of the with big glasses?
He
plays himself, I think.
I am a nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy. And I thought, oh, he's so over the top. Yeah. Right? Whatever, the actor's just overdoing it. And then you see the actual Toby in the film.
Is the real guy plays it?
The real guy pops up later, in conversations with Harvey, and he's just like that.
Yeah.
So you think, wow, like there's people like this. And he has like a badge he wears saying genuine nerd.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, I need to get you that for Christmas.
Thank you.
But no, it's a really cool film, and I mean, you might not dig it if you're not into these kind of slow burn,
independent
autobiographic pieces, especially kind of sort of dramatical and funny.
Yeah.
And no, I mean, it's so different for a comic book film as well. So I really loved it. So check it out if you can.
And Ghost World.
Ghost World, I didn't have time to see. I'm very sorry.
Because I was going to say that's in a similar kind of vein.
It is, yeah.
Steve Buscemi,
Scarlett Johansson. Yeah,
and Thora Birch, I think.
Is it Thora Birch? Okay.
I
think
so.
She's familiar. Was she in that movie where Kevin Spacey blows his brains out? Yeah, you're right. You're right. American Beauty.
I
think that's the girl. Okay. She plays the other girl in Ghost World, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I recognize her face, but not her name, so I'm impressed you knew that.
I don't know why, but yeah, I don't know what else she's been in, so I kind of remember what she has been in.
Don't look it up.
I am looking it up right now.
It's not important. I think that's her.
Okay.
Yeah. let's move on. What else have you been reading or watching?
Superman Batman 75, I've been reading that. So that's the 75th issue, which just came out. Have a bit of a look at that. So it's it's one of my favourite titles.
There's a lot of people on this.
I don't think she was in American Beauty, Milan.
Oh, then who am I thinking of?
She was in Dungeons and Dragons. Are you thinking of Mina Savari? The beautiful woman?
No. The Kevin Spacey's daughter, the brunette. I thought that was her.
Okay, maybe.
I'm probably wrong. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
So, Superman Batman 75, it's one of my favourite titles, but it's been in quite a slump as of late. But this is Paul Levitt and Jerry Ordway do a... the main feature, so it goes for 20-something pages, I guess. And that's about Superman, the Legion of Superheroes. There's a nice little bit on the little kids, the little Justice League kids, which is pretty awesome, which is the kids when they're dying, which is Superman's kind of dying. Or is he?
Crypto versus Ace.
There's a Crypto, which is Superman's dog, versus Ace, the Bat-Hound, which is Batman's dog, and they're not really fighting.
The dog has a mask.
It's like they're teaming up and that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's pretty good, and there's also a two-page story written by David Finch.
So they are separate stories?
They're all different stories in an anthology. Mm. David Finch, who's a fantastic artist, is now becoming a writer, which seems to be the key that DC are getting their favourite artists to stay on board. So you can stay with us and we'll let you write as well. So David Finch does a two-page story which is set in the future, and Damian Wayne, who we'll talk more about next week in our Father's Day special, is Batman, and Connor, who's now Superboy, is Superman, and they're at the graves of the original Superman and Batman. They're surrogate fathers and talking. There's a nice one by
that's awesome.
Joker and Lex, kind of in cartoon versions of themselves.
That's hilarious. And it's by Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo, who did Lex Luthor, Man of Steel, and the other Joker one, which wasn't as good.
Yes, correct.
But they've done it in a Calvin Hobbes style. I haven't read it, but they picked up the style pretty well.
So if you like Superman and Batman, and you haven't read the title, this is a good place to jump in. It's got, you know, a whole bunch of different stories about Superman, Batman, and assorted characters.
Hmm.
So that's pretty much me done, what I've been reading.
All right. Last thing I'll mention is... I'll mention what I've been watching. I've been watching King of the Hill.
I've been watching something as well, but okay, you go first.
Okay, yeah. Have you ever seen King of the Hill?
A few times, but it didn't really stood out to me as something hilarious.
Yeah, well... I remember seeing it like when I was younger, and I didn't really get it, maybe.
Okay.
Now I'm like, yes, this is what I've been looking for.
It's run for a long time. It just finished.
It has, it just finished.
11 seasons or something?
Yeah, like a huge number of seasons. It's a long-running show on Fox.
Okay.
It was like their second flagship title for a while, next to Simpsons, basically.
Okay.
And they show them back-to-back kind of thing. Basically like a Midwest American family, except it's much more satirical than The Simpsons. Simpsons is more kind of silly, goofy.
Yep.
Or at least it was after the first couple of seasons, whereas King of the Hill has kept the satire up. It's by the same creators, Mike Judge, same creators of Beavis and Butthead and Daria, I believe. She was a character from Beavis and Butthead anyway. So, I mean, yeah, the satire is spot on. I really love it. I actually kind of prefer it to Simpsons.
Wow.
Yeah.
The first, like, 10 episodes of The Simpsons were awesome, and that's all I watched. And then after that, it was like, bum, bum.
Of The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Wow. Season 1?
Season 1 to 10.
Oh, the first 10. I thought you said episodes. I'm like, wow. Okay. So you only saw as far as Lisa's saxophone got, like... Remember how she loved that saxophone player?
I think probably the last was when Ned's wife died.
The last, yeah.
I think that was about as recent, but yeah.
I caught a bit of it the other day, and they had that psychiatrist who you haven't seen since the first season.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. That's
when the family was electing each other in the first season.
And that was just a bit unusual. And, and he was like, I love your book, Marge.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, where have you been? And he's like, I've been very sick. This is so bizarre. But yeah, King of the Hill, I really like it. I think it's almost like a blend between, you know how South Park's very topical?
Yes.
And Simpsons is a bit more family-oriented. It's like if those two met, but it's not as gross out as South Park can be.
Okay.
And it's got that kind of, but it's got that kind of we have something to say thing, you know, that Simpsons lost long ago.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend checking it out. I've been watching from season 4 onwards because I just figured the first couple of seasons will do them finding their feet. So I don't want to ruin my experience of it. But check it out if you haven't already.
I watched last night, From Paris with Love, which sounds like either a failed James Bond film.
Oh, I know the one. Comedy. Yeah.
John Travolta plays Charlie Wax, a US top secret agent guy, and he's got a diamond earring, a bald head, and a goatee.
And our favourite Henry VIII, Jonathan Rhys.
Cheaters, Jonathan Rhys Meyers.
Yes.
He's in Mission Impossible 3 as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically Jonathan Rhys Meyers plays like this kind of CIA kind of. Well, I don't know if you see, I don't think he says what agency he's with, but anyway, he wants to get out in the field.
The Impossible Mission agency.
So he teams out. John Travolta's a wild and crazy guy, so they team up. It's directed by Pierre Morel, who directed Taken with Liam Neeson, which is okay. But a far better film is District B-13, which was released, I think, about 5-6 years ago. A French film.
Yeah.
Awesome film. Probably one of my top 5 action movies of all time. District B-13.
What's that thing called where you're running?
Parkour.
Parkour. That's what that one is, right?
Yeah. It's got one of the bad guys that was in Die Hard 4 doing all that kind of stuff. He's in this film.
So I'm guessing all these guys got jobs as stuntmen after District B-13.
Yeah, it's a great film, District B-13, if you can find it.
Do they explain how everyone knows how to do parkour, including the cops?
Well, no, not really. It's set in the future, France. It's been segregated into different districts.
Yes.
And then there's a light nuclear warhead that this cop has to team up with this kind of rookie parkour guy.
Okay.
The sequel is called Ultimatum. That came out about a year or two ago. Not as great, but the original is awesome. He's also attached, this is Pierre Morel, also attached to do a Dune film in 2012.
Ah, I'd heard about that. So, if anyone's seen the horrible David Lynch Dune.
Is it horrible?
It's not good. No. I remember
David Bowie in that?
Sting.
Sting, okay. So close.
Yeah, it's interesting. No, I wouldn't recommend watching the original David Lynch.
Was that a miniseries?
A Sci-Fi Channel miniseries that came out a little while ago with famous redheaded actress played. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Annette Bening?
No, she's not redheaded.
She is, isn't she? I can confirm
it's not important.
Thora Birch did play Kevin Spacey's daughter.
Ah, yes!
Kevin Spacey was Lester Burnham. Thora Birch was Jane Burnham in American Beauty.
Yeah.
There we go.
I win the internet.
Directed by Sam Mendes, who I think just got divorced from Kate Winslet.
That's so sad.
And he was going to do a James Bond film, I think. But MGM have shut that down.
Yeah,
they're having financial problems.
Yeah, James Bond, which is quite surprising. I think the last film didn't make the money they needed it to make.
Yeah.
To basically fund the rest of their projects, and James Bond has been put on the back burner indefinitely.
Ooh. But I know there's studios that are interested in helping him out because they see the potential in the franchise.
Yeah, going halvesies.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, you think it's a franchise with a lot of potential,
but
I've. Like, so few James Bond movies are good, let alone worth watching. Do you know what I mean?
I kind of grew up on the Roger Moore era.
Yeah.
The Jaws, the gold metal teeth and all that, so it's kind of outrageous. And
I was a kid when the Pierce Brosnan ones were the... Where were we? James Bond.
Roger Moore and...
I like Timothy Pierce Dalton. Brosnan.
Timothy Dalton.
Dalton.
It could be down,
Dalton, China. Yeah. No, they Channel 7 here or whatever has been, in Australia has been showing them all in order during the weeks, and it's been so good to just
watch.
You
watch a lot more TV than I do.
I flick it on and then I flick it away because I remember how boring James Bond movies can be.
Yeah,
they age really badly.
Yeah, they do.
The
gadgets are like a mobile phone or.
Amazing. Yeah. It's like the Get Smart Shoe phone. Like, why did it need to be in his shoe? Just have a phone in his pocket.
Yeah, that's true. But then if they take
there's gags,
pockets,
I mean, yeah.
And they take, but you know.
Yeah, that's
true. They
yeah.
don't take your shoes when you get kidnapped.
Because I was watching Get Smart the other day. Okay. And it is a gag because like they were in a tub filling up with water and they
is
were going to drown.
Is this the movie or the
TV show? The TV show. There's a movie?
Yeah, Steve Carell.
Oh, no, no.
Anne Hathaway.
Okay, no. Yes, okay. No, the original 99. Okay. Rawr. Rawr.
It's just like Halle Berry.
Yeah. Rawr. You're going down, Shardstone. Anyway, should we move on?
Yes, what else have you been playing?
I have been playing the Monkey Island 2 LeChuck's Revenge Special Edition.
Whose revenge?
LeChuck. He's the ghost, the demon pirate, LeChuck. Monkey Island was basically end of the 80s, early 90s, and then throughout a series of adventure games put out by LucasArts.
This isn't the one where you're a monkey inside a ball.
Monkey Ball.
Is that what it's called?
The Brendan Fraser film? No, Monkey Bones. No. Monkey Island, you're basically... It's a kind of comedic adventure game. You're a wannabe pirate in the first game. In the second game, the demon pirate LeChuck, who you've defeated in the first one as a ghost, has come back. It's pretty funny, but the special edition has just been released. They've sort of revamped the old game, which was in, 256 pixels, MIDI sound, and redrawn it. They've mounted all the new graphics on the old engines, so it still plays like the old game.
Okay.
The controls have been modernized, so you don't have the huge verbs on the bottom, like talk to, pick up. Oh, okay. You remember those?
Yes.
And the music's excellent. But there's the commentary during the game by the creators. At certain times you can hear what they were thinking of when they were...
Awesome.
But you might have heard of the guys, Ron Gilbert, Tim Schafer. Tim Schafer made Psychonauts. Do you know that game? And Brutal Legend, which came out a little while ago.
Jack Black.
With Jack Black.
Yes.
The fine looking new graphics, I really like it.
Cool.
Much better than the previous special edition, so I almost didn't pick it up, but check it out if you're interested. Dominic Armato reprises the role of Guybrush's voice. The original game didn't have voices.
Oh, okay.
So they've added on new voice recording. It's awesome, and you can switch between the old graphics with the new voices, and you can mix and match the special features, which is kind of cool. And it's really streamlined, so I'd recommend checking it out. It's $10.
That's a bargain.
It is for like full sound recorded, full new music, full new graphics. It feels like a new game.
Awesome.
Yeah, check it out.
I've been playing game-wise. Well, I haven't been playing much, but I've been getting into Killzone 2.
What's that?
It's like a sci-fi FPS again, first-person shooter.
Oh, you love first-person shooters.
I do. I like to shoot people headshots. There's nothing like it.
You're a peace-loving guy, Chris.
Shut up!
Very meek and mild.
Shut your mouth! That's it for what we've been reading. And... watching.
Next up, Trade Spot.
Trade.
Almost said what we've been reading again. Yeah, sorry. Swap.
So this is the segment where, because I'm quite the superhero guy and Lan's quite the independent, black and white, arty type dude.
I think you are as well, but you just...
I am, and you've been getting me more into superhero stuff, but non-superhero stuff.
I find you pick up a lot more stuff that I haven't heard of, on a whim.
I'm quite a impulsive
disposable
purchaser.
Disposable income, perhaps?
Yeah, I've got to change my ways.
Yeah.
I'm trying to save for a house. Stop tempting me, comics.
Yeah.
So Power Out... is a relatively new book, just been released from Canal Press, which is by Nathan Schreiber. And he won the Zurich Award last year. The Zurich Award, that's X-E-R-I-C, is basically it's kind of like a grant given to independent creators.
Fund you.
So they say, that's awesome, we'll give you the money, you can publish it.
Can anyone apply for that?
Look on their website and
find out. I think, look it up if you're a wannabe comic book.
I don't know if it's only American or Canadians or whatever.
XCRIC.
Yes.
Okay.
Awards grants. Mm. So it's a pretty small, it's slightly smaller than your standard comic, but a few.
The format's got more pages, yeah.
Yeah. A few pages, I guess. Probably 100 and something pages.
They're not numbered, so about 100, yeah.
Black and white and blue.
You see that a lot. Black and white comics, and then they use a different color for shading.
Yeah,
you saw it in Mysterious Polyp, and they would switch between pages. Darwin Cook's Hunter, same thing. Yeah,
mistakenly said had yellow and blue in it, but I was thinking of Mysterious Polyp.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's black, white, and blue. Yeah. As is Power Out. So basically, it's kind of like an independent, almost like an independent movie. It's got that kind of approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's also if you go on activate.com, which is ACT-I-VATE.com,
mm-hmm.
he's going to be put up the second part to this story.
Yes.
And hopefully that'll be released in print. But yeah, Power Out. So it's basically follows this young guy who doesn't really say much at all during the course of
He just plays video games.
He's a bit of a loner. His parents go away and he's kind of stuck alone with his older sister.
He has a party in the house and I think he's. Yeah, he's just a bit of a... Yeah.
He goes off and has adventures of sort and...
Well, not adventure. He just sort of just wanders around.
Adventures in his mind.
And he avoids people.
Yeah. It's. I was reading an interview with Schreiber online, and he was saying that it was inspired by the big blackout in 2003 in New York. I don't even remember. There was like a huge blackout or brownout.
Brownout, yeah.
I was going to say. Not to be racist, I suppose.
No, it's when it's not completely out.
Oh,
so
really?
So it comes on and off and during sections. So, it's a brownout.
So he was saying he was inspired by that and how some people really loved it, the brownout, because they kind of, life without electricity, and they kind of wander around meeting their neighbours, that kind of stuff. Mm. Other people hated it. So he was kind of inspired to write a story about that. So basically, this blackout in this town, this young guy who's an avid gamer and quite socially awkward, doesn't really have any friends, bit of a loner. He's left home alone as his sister meets some new friends.
Over the internet, I believe.
Yes,
online. And they go away to a summer house or whatever.
And have a party, and so he's downstairs playing his video games. He can hear his sister upstairs losing.
Although she doesn't seem too happy either.
No. Yeah. It actually, what I liked, it showed the kind of teen angst quite well. It's not a very wordy book.
No.
But it's quite an emotional book, and it's got a whole bunch of praise by a whole bunch of different people on it on the back. But yeah, it's quite interesting. And then towards the end it gets a bit more surreal as this guy kind of journeys and he thinks he's playing a video game and he has flashbacks to his dead grandmother as he's walking around in the forest outside the outskirts of his town.
Yeah, I can't really tell where it's going, to be honest.
I do want to see where it's obvious that it's a first part, and it does say in the back coming soon Power Out book 2, so I'm curious to where it goes next. But I liked it just as an exploration of a young boy's insecurity and almost insanity and wild imagination.
I'd say it's quite non-verbal, and it's almost like the wild imagination of a boy who has no imagination because he's been sapped by these video games. That's what it feels like. He's almost like a zombie. He fights these zombies in his games. So yes. I think that's intentional.
Yep.
He just sort of walks around with these half-dazed eyes, not really sure what to do, so he mows the lawn.
Yeah.
The milk goes off, but he doesn't go buy anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think he has any money, though. No. His sister's meant to take care of him, and she doesn't. That's all right. What do you think of the art?
I found it entertaining. The art is quite simple, cartoony, but it's not jarring. It's never unrealistic. And there's parts where there's a lot of black, obviously during the blackout. There's also parts where it's a lot of white. But I think like there's this bit where he meets this like Spanish or Mexican girl, and she doesn't really understand what she's saying. But he shows the awkwardness of the faces. There's also a part where he's, having wet dreams and weird things. It's quite a mature take, but it never seems quite out there. It never seems too weird, almost, even though there's some kind of weird stuff in his fantasies.
I really get the feeling that this guy had read Black Hole, because there's certain panel arrangements and certain close-ups.
By Charles Burns?
Yeah, by Charles Burns, so I couldn't place the name. And there's certain panels where he overlays mental images, which is straight out of Black Hole.
Okay.
But obviously his art technique isn't quite there yet. It feels like a beginner's book.
Yep.
But these are interesting because you can see them refine certain ideas through the course of it. It's by the end of it, the art's a lot better than it was at the beginning. So,
and structured as a tale, I found it quite interesting.
Hmm.
It's like I said, it almost seems like it doesn't have a purpose. It's kind of going nowhere.
Yeah.
But as you get towards the end, it's like, where is this going? It's curious. It makes you want to read more. I would recommend it if you like your indie kind of black and white books.
I'd say it's okay.
A mature take. I think I liked it more than you. But,
yeah.
Power Out by Nathan Schreiber. Now for something entirely different. Winsor McKay's Little Nemo.
Little Nemo.
Slumberland. Now, I just want to point out that the Kingdom Come DC series that was released in 1996 by Mark Waid and Alex Ross, there's a preacher who's the kind of protagonist of that book, and he's called Norman McKay. And he took his surname because they're quite a fans of Winsor McKay, so they took his surname. Winsor McKay is, he died in 1934, but he's quite the... I can kind of see a line if you go through your comics history from Winsor McKay to Will Eisner to kind of Chris Ware.
I think so.
A line.
Yeah.
He's someone who plays with the medium a lot. He plays with conventions of storytelling.
Yeah.
So this book that we have both read recently is a big hardcover bound book, quite a large format. And it's volume one.
Yeah, a lot of pages, and it's just volume one.
And it's a collection of his Little Nemo Slumber, which was a comic strip back in the day.
They, not quite a strip, like the full page, Sunday page.
Oh, okay, like Wednesday comics and food.
So I had handed this to Chris before. We didn't have time to cover it during that in our first episode.
Wow. Yeah.
And, no, this has been one of my faves for a while. I love the detail he goes into, but I'll let... I'll summarise it, basically.
Please do.
Little Nemo is just a little precocious child who during the course of his dreams, travels to bizarre places.
Exotic locales.
Exotic locales. Usually the joke is he'll be having some sort of... It'll pick up every week, so the story will continue. Like every time he goes to sleep, he'll pick up the same dream and continue it, so every Sunday. But it always starts with him falling asleep, and then at the end some violent thing will happen or something will fall on him, and then he'll wake up, you know, and his mum will tell him off for being an idiot.
And they're all one-page, multi-panel kind of gags.
That's right.
They're not really gags. They're not funny as such.
No. And this is from about 1910,
like
plus minus 5 years, because it was running for quite a long while.
All full colour.
Full colour, yeah. It's quite
fine artwork, quite fine lines. It's not cartoony, as you'd think.
It's interesting, yeah. There's quite realistic in terms of the poses, and they're quite natural-looking.
He's got good anatomy, and there's not necessarily a lot of detail, because there's a lot of panels in each page, so you don't see a lot of... There's no close-ups or anything. They're all kind of mid-shot, long-shot.
Yeah, it's all mid-shot, long-shots, yeah. And I find where it really excels is when they're in these extravagant spaces.
Yes.
So they'll be on... I've just flicked to around a page, and the bed has grown these long, long legs, like Gumby legs, and it's strolling through this cityscape. And I found, as a comic, those ones work the best with, like, there's a funhouse mirror page where he stretches out all the characters and that sort of thing. But what did you think of it?
I wasn't as impressed as I thought, because I've heard Winsor McKay's name ever since I've been reading comics. So I know Mark Hamill played Luke Skywalker. He's quite a big fan, because he's 1910, this is when kind of newspaper kind of comics in that large format were popular. Now they were like, you know, and the people behind them were kind of like the movie stars of their day in a way, because this was cheap entertainment and the family read it and they were everywhere. There was even a stage show in the back of this book.
That's right, they mentioned that, which would have been dismal, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's like advertising, you know, so Little Nemo was quite the pop culture marketable character back in his day. As I said, fine line, interesting art. I mean, every page ends the same, like he falls asleep, and it's almost like quite a too simple ending.
Remember, this would have been like every Sunday.
Yeah.
Right? So you're reading these one after the other, whereas you'd expect a bit of familiarity because the kids are going to be reading this.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm. But
it's almost an excuse to go to far and weird places. A kid falls asleep and he goes to... And he talks with animals and goes to... It's almost Tim Burton kind of esque in that it's not gothic, but it's fairy tale.
Fairy tale-ish. I'd say Terry Gilliam esque.
Yes,
he would be like the perfect man to make this into a film.
Yes.
Unlike there was a film, but I didn't see it, and I imagine it's not very good.
Decades ago.
Yeah, sometime 80s, 70s, and
Winsor McKay also did one of the first ever animated films.
That's right.
Gertie the Dinosaur, which was released in 1914.
Did you watch it?
Like 12 minutes long. No, is it on YouTube?
It's on YouTube, okay. Yeah.
Gertie the Dinosaur.
It's pretty goofy.
I have heard of that before. And that was kind of the first... I don't know if that would have been before Mickey Mouse. Probably around the same time. But one of the first short films to have a non-human character with actual personality that kind of, you know...
That's right. It wasn't just dancing around. Yeah. Basically, the trainer, I think... okay, there's the picture. It's all line drawn. It's all white, then like line drawn animation, and then like the you know how in 19 that era the place cards would come up with the text of someone saying something.
Yep.
So like the conductor or whatever would be saying Gertie, do a backflip.
Yeah.
And then she'd be like, no.
Like, okay.
And then she'd do something naughty, and then he'd tell her off. So she was just kind of being a jerk.
Okay.
But yeah, that's what they meant by personality. I meant,
yeah,
because it isn't just her like dancing on the spot,
just trying to show off that hey, we can make things move. Like, yeah, it just wasn't experimental animation.
A lot of that era was just like these rubber-legged people doing circles with their hands. I'm doing it now for Chris, but
it's like the Batusi all over again.
It is a bit like the Batusi.
It was interesting that there's. The panels are numbered. I felt that was good. And like you said, kids would be reading this too. So right to left is pretty obvious. But and also, there's a bit where I think it's called Sammy the Sneeze or something. It's not Little Nemo related, but kind of earlier in this book, because this book doesn't have just Little Nemo stuff. But yeah, there's a character called Sammy the Sneeze very early on, and I'm trying to find it as we speak. But there's a bit where he kind of... it's just like a three or four panel thing where this kid sneezes, and the panels collapse in on himself.
Oh, collapse in on him, yeah. He did a lot of that, like...
disintegrating, kind of breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah,
there
that's
we go.
It.
Little
he
Sammy
did a
sneeze.
Lot of these formal experiments, like going, these are the panels, how can I break that?
Yes.
So he, at an early stage, he was experimenting with all the panels would be... a larger world, and then the character would walk through the space, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's like a vista, and you split into panels.
Okay.
Which is like from this era, you had a lot of guys who were doing their own thing because you didn't have conventions established. And that's also why you have numbers on the panels, because comics were new. Like
this. True.
And it's helpful because he does a lot of wacky panel layouts.
Yeah.
Like stretching vertically, horizontally. He breaks that grid a lot.
Yeah.
I know, I enjoy these formal experiments because you see how people would have read this and then tried their own things compared to something like Gasoline Alley, which I guess came out a couple of decades
after.
Is that
with the yellow kid and is that Gasoline Alley? I don't know.
I think
anyway.
I can't remember their names, sorry.
There's also Dream of the Rarebit Fiend, which is Winsor McKay did, which sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's ringing a bell.
But
again, tearing up the panels. Is that a couple arguing and then they're
kind of tearing out the panels as they argue.
Yeah, they're ripping them off the wall in frustration.
It's almost breaking the fourth wall kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot of fourth wall break, yeah.
It kind of reminded me of Alice in Wonderland.
Yes, definitely.
Just a young kid going into this fairy tale land. Mm. So this is a hardcover book. It's got Little Nemo and Slumberland and also some other stuff as well. It's done by Checker Books.
Mm.
It's good. I mean, if you like your old kind of comics and if you're interested in comics history,
yes,
this is an awesome place to start because he was certainly a man ahead of his time.
Absolutely. Probably not for everyone if you're not interested in that.
No.
And I wouldn't recommend picking up anything smaller than the big hardcovers.
Yeah.
Because you would lose so much.
And this is their size, their original format.
No, these are smaller. Much smaller.
It's closer to it, I guess.
Even the last couple of weeks I lent you, or we were flicking through Prince Valiant.
Oh, yes.
And even that was smaller than the original comics. So even this, you're losing a lot of detail. So you gain something in compression, you know, for sure. But it's almost like the original art boards that artists work on now.
Oh, okay, yes.
If comics were published in that format.
Yep.
Like, it wouldn't work with... I'm just flicking through Superman, Batman now, and that wouldn't work at the huge size.
No.
But, you know, if you had four times the panels, maybe?
Yeah. It's good stuff. It's pretty... sometimes we forget when we think comics history, like it only started becoming revolutionary in the 60s and 70s, but it goes way back, sequential art goes way back.
Mm. Yeah, I find when we talk about comics history, we tend to start with...
Yeah.
It always starts with people talking about Siegel and Shuster, and you know, and that's more of a modern era.
The guys who created Superman.
Very sorry. I should have said that.
38, I think. 39.
Yeah.
So this even predates that by decades.
Like quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So that is what we've been reading and trade swapping and all manner of things. Website of the week.
Ooh.
Maladdin's Choice this week.
Yes, it is. I was meant to pick one, and last minute I realised... If anyone hasn't been... I know it's a fairly popular site now, but if you haven't been here and you're listening to this podcast, it is right up your alley. It's a website called io9.com. Letter I, letter O, 9.
Yep.
Basically, it's like a blog aggregate site, so they collect a lot of a huge range of blog stuff that'll interest the genuine geek, basically. So there's science, there's like cool little bits of history, there's pop culture stuff, so there'll be comic book news, there'll be pieces of art, like based on films, there'll be... what else can you see there in the site?
I'm looking at there now. There's I was just quickly skimming an article called Heroes and Villains of Imaginary Worlds, a quick primer, and it's got the five different types of heroes, the five different, like the scientist, the anti-hero, and that kind of stuff.
They'll list like 20 science fiction films you must see, you know, that sort of thing.
There's an interesting little article here on the Superman Batman comics this week that we mentioned. Calvin and Hobbes were imagined as Joker and the Lex.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. See, they're on the ball.
All that kind of stuff.
Stuff clips about, from TV that you might find funny.
Real cases of paranormal kind of exorcist style stuff.
It's almost like every topic I'm interested in happens to be on this site, basically. So not it cuts out the who is Brad dating sort of stuff. It's all... what's happening in films you'd be interested in. There's an artist's new version of a Let the Right One In poster, which is like this beautifully rendered drawing.
There's an interesting headline: Wesley Snipes was almost Geordi LaForge in Star Trek: The Next Generation. Wow,
I didn't know that. And they've got here an article about the first ever picture of dark matter, and
the 10 greatest ever penis scenes in science fiction.
Yes, that's following on from Piranha 3D, I believe.
Yes, yes.
Are you going to watch that?
Some guys at work were talking about it, and they were saying it's just stupid fun. It looks just...
It's obviously in 3D, and there's a lot of nudity in it.
Yeah.
So it'll be the first 3D nudie film, which I find kind of interesting.
Yeah.
If you've never seen boobs in 3D, say if you're a geek who lives in the basement, if you've never had a girlfriend, this is the closest you'll ever get.
All right, I better reserve my ticket.
Oh, ouch. Self-deprecating, Chris. Self-deprecating.
So that's it. So that's io9.com. Next week we are talking about Dad. Not Daddy Daycare, the Eddie Murphy movie. I think there was a sequel, Daddy Day Camp.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that sounds great.
Excuse me that.
I should rent that.
Father's Day. Father's Day next weekend. So we'll be talking about Father's Day.
A reminder now, if you haven't got anything, get off your ass and get your dad a comic.
Yes. Oh, look, you'll be surprised. The way I do it is I ask people, like at work, there's another guy at work that I have to lend someone to, and I said, what films do you like?
Yeah, that's a good way to do it,
And then I know, he goes, I don't like science fiction, I don't like, so I've got something perfect in mind, he likes realistic gritty, so I was going to lend him the Gamekeeper, which is published by Dynamite Entertainment, or originally by
what is that one?
Virgin Comics.
Okay.
I'll lend it to you. It's worth a possible trade swap.
That's good.
Called, written by Guy, or conceived by Guy Ritchie, and written by Andy Diggle, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So it's quite a gritty crime kind of comic. Crime it's Father's comic. Day, so that's what we'll be talking about next week.
Best and worst dads, perhaps.
Yeah, and comic-related fathers.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us this week.
Chris and Alan. Obviously, check out future podcasts on extrasequential.com.
And my blog, Chris Bather, will be at comicbookjesus.com.
Yeah, and the music you've heard today has been on www.purgeaudit.com. Music for the show.
And if you have any questions, comments, queries, you can email myself at Chris with a K, chris@comicbookjesus.com.
We love feedback and we like to know what you think of us.
Yes.
And if we don't like it, we'll delete it. And you might get read out on the show.
Indeed.
So try not to swear too much.
Yes.
Because we never would do that.
It waits international infamy.
All right. Catch you all next week.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.